Welcome to the episode 33 of the Management 2.0 podcast. My name is Simon Dückert and this is another episode mainly in English. At the 7th of December, the first German Working Out Loud camp took place in the Wietzemann space in Stuttgart. I recorded the talk of John Stepper and also the panel discussion of the Working Out Loud community of practice afterwards. John's talk is in English and the panel discussion afterwards is in German. And now the stage is yours, Mr. John Stepper.
Look, I'm just a guy, right, who's gone through a few changes in my life. And along the way, I could really desperately try and fit in, right? Whether you're a kid at school, or as you grow up and you're a teenager, and you've all kind of remembered some of that, both the good times and the bad times. And then at work, right, and you dress a certain way and you show up to a certain place. And all along, I was conscious that it didn't always resonate with me. Right, that expression of bringing your whole self to work is really about resonance, about being authentic, about being you. And I just wanted to be me. I just That's why I love you, Barbara Schmidt. But you know, it's hard to be you in that. Well, that's I picked any office building randomly that I worked in for 19 years. And I've worked in big places for 30 something years. And there are good things and bad things. But what it's given me is an appreciation for what many people go through. Right? What the limits may be placed by the system, by the people, and by yourself. And so I wanted to work on that. Like, how could I feel better? Because it wasn't about money, and it wasn't about title. It wasn't about those things. Like, they weren't bringing me joy. In fact, I was quite unhappy at various points in my career. So what would it be? And about 10 years ago is when I started to scratch at that, at a particular kind of low point in my career. I'm like, man, there's got to be something else. I literally remember walking around the block saying, I can't do this for 15 more years. I can't. Like, what am I going to do? And you feel almost as bizarre as it is, you know, because I had a good job and a good company, but I felt trapped. So I started to do some research, lots of popular books about what makes people feel better, what makes people feel motivated, what makes people do what they do. And it starts with some of the basics that you've probably heard before: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. We're all wired, like literally wired deep inside, to want a bit more control, a sense of competence or getting better at something, and a sense of connection to other people, connection to a purpose. And I kept going, and you know, this is from cognitive science, where it's not just a good tweetable phrase that we want control. Like, it's deeply, deeply wired in us, and that your sense, your perception that you have some kind of control at work is tied to your motivation, like inside your head. And so when you feel robbed of that, rightly or wrongly, but when you feel that you don't have control, I have to dress this way, I have to show up at this place, I have to sit here, I have to do what this person says, systematically you start to feel bad and disempowered. And it's nobody's fault, it's just the way it is. But as I kept reading, it's okay, there are ways that you could take control back. And this woman talked about job crafting, another phrase I've been using for a while, which is almost no matter what job you're in, you can exercise control, or at least some people do, when it comes to the tasks they did throughout the day, even in a small way, the relationships they had at work, and their perceptions about what they were doing. And so she asked people, how do you feel about what you do? She asked people who were software engineers. She asked people who were mopping the floors in hospitals. She asked people who were nurses, teachers, and so on, people who cooked. Wide range of jobs. She's like, how do you feel? And I, like many people, assumed that, well, there are certain jobs that were a calling, maybe a teacher, maybe a doctor. And there are certain jobs that were a job, like, I don't know, serving in a restaurant or cleaning things. And what she found was not that. It was actually evenly distributed. So that there were some people, roughly a third, that no matter what they did, they tapped into control, competence, and connection. No matter what they did. So, okay, well, that's interesting. How did they do that? And it turns out that it's something anybody could do. And what those people that she interviewed said was, I have a voice, right? The same themes keep coming up over and over again. I'm recognized. I'm me. I'm a human being. I count. It's such a powerful thing. Later, I did some more research on, well, how does that apply to the workplace? Because we have to collaborate and cooperate to get things done. So this was a paper a long time ago, kind of pre-internet, about who cooperates with whom, who exchanges information with whom. And what they found was that proximity mattered, how close we are, right? It's pre-internet. But the reason why it mattered is because when we were closer physically, we tended to share informal information and get to know each other better. Hey, what'd you do on the weekend? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry to hear your dad's sick, and so on. And those kind of micro contributions over time built this sense of relatedness and trust. So it was the sense of relatedness that allowed people to exchange information and collaborate. And then came the internet and showed that we could do that across locations. So that's where Working Out Loud Circles were born. Some of you, many of you have been in them. A number of people were in a workshop this morning. Those circles are designed to help people experience this feeling that, look, I choose my goal. I choose who's on my relationship list. I choose what steps to take, small or big. And over time, it lights up those three intrinsic motivators. So we were at Bosch the other day, and some people were sharing what their experience was like in a circle. And if you've been through one, there's no magic. There's no one thing. There's no trick. But some of the people were like, hey, this really changed me. Or it opened things up. It made my world bigger. It was the best thing I've done at work in a long time. And some were emotional. And somebody in the audience says, hey, this sounds like a religion. And I said, you're right. The reason why people feel that way is because they're tapping into something that's innately human, right? That's what it is. And that thing that they're tapping into not only makes them feel better, but the way the practice is set up in these circles, it allows them to tap into the collective knowledge of the organization and to extend their reach so that they can cooperate with more people. What we've seen over and over again is that it's not change management or you're learning the IT skills or you learn how to write more effective emails. Like, yes, you kind of learn these skills in your circle, but something else happens. When it works, something else happens between the people in the group. And when they experience that in the group, they start to see it outside the group in the network that they're building. So there's a gentleman, he works at Bosch, his name is Vincent. He's got a beautiful little baby. We've never met, actually. But we had this nice email exchange, and he finally wrote about that this changes me as a person, but also as somebody at work. And he had this nice quote, which I found so poignant. It helps me be more aware of like who I am and what I have to offer to the people around me, to the people at work. So that improves his chances of creating relationships that matter. And when he does that, he improves his chances, his access to knowledge, opportunities, innovation, which is good for Vincent and it's good for the company. That's where we are, right? We've got this practice that looks and smells like work, has working in the title. And in the workplace, we're creating we're creating these safe, confidential spaces where people can develop themselves in a way that's good for them and good for the company, and in a way that could be pretty powerful. So what you have already done, whether you're at Bosch with 200 circles or you're at a place with one, what you've already done is you've somehow managed to create a safe, confidential space at work where you're at least making it possible to feel like Vincent feels. So now I want to go deeper. And so I want to give you a sense of like, well, okay, great. What now what? I want to go deeper in terms of how do we improve how people relate to each other? Like, how do we help them go even further in terms of deepening relationships, deepening the sense of relatedness and trust in an organization? So I've been doing a lot more research since the book and really in the last year or so. And there's a lot of bad news, actually. And it's a great book. It's called Behave. And it you can almost think of it as a, came out this year, as a manual for being a human being. It's about the molecular biology, genetics, and neuroscience of why we do what we do. Right, so it's not a thriller, but if you're standing here, you could read this book if it was in German, and it's a great book. So there's lots of bad news, and I'm going to give you some of that. But I promise, there's this, you know, spoiler alert. There's an uplifting ending. Two things. One, the guy who wrote it, by the way, spent decades in the jungle as a primatologist, someone who studies gorillas and baboons, as well as other kinds of research. So he's been studying this for a long time, and what he found was, as social animals, we are wired for us and them. So that's just part of what we do, is as we have evolved to have this unthinking process for dividing the world into us and them. And as humans, we do that in all sorts of crazy ways. One. Two, we've evolved, and different kinds of primates have different kinds of social hierarchies. We've evolved to spend most of our mental energy on that hierarchy, where we fit in, who does what, both our own hierarchy, but also other people, which is why that's what, but even when your brain is supposedly at rest, it is working out how people relate to each other. So the bad news is, this is something called the implicit assumption test. Quick description of how it works. I show you pictures so fast that you can't even, they're subliminal, and you have to, I show you, let's say, a white face, and then you have to just pick the word good or bad, and I show you a black face, good or bad, right? And what they measure is what's going on in your brain, and as well as the latency, how long it takes you to respond. So this, you've got this implicit assumption, maybe, that people like you are good, you're faster at it, there's different activity. People who are not like you, however you define that, race is the most obvious, but it's not the only one. It takes you longer to hit that button without you thinking. Like, sorry, you're all racists. Sorry, you all don't like the IT department, or you all don't like the people in the branch offices, or you all don't like people who are those young millennials who are on their phones all the time, or, and so on. Tourists in New York City, they walk so slow. Us and them, us and them, us and them. And we have this nice convenient mechanism that says, I could tell who you are right away. I put you in a box before I even know it. And it's measurable, that's what we do. Bad. Bad for deepening a sense of relatedness, because the us and them thing says, I treat the uses better and differently. All right, so that's bad news number one. Bad news number two is hierarchy. So this was Milgram, if anyone ever heard of Stanley Milgram. And long story short is human beings would do horrible things to other human beings if they were told to do it. So we don't even have to go too much into that. But it was anybody that you put in the system, and they would shock people until they had a heart attack. The experiment demands that you continue, but I don't want... The experiment demands... Okay, zap! And those people were... They don't do those experiments anymore because those people were scarred afterwards. Like, oh my God, I'm a monster. Yes, you are. Yes, I am. Right? So, okay, my point here, yes, thank you. We're all racist monsters. My point here is that if you're trying to help people collaborate and cooperate, you have to just know what you're dealing with. It's not natural. Okay. By the way, what makes it even worse is not email, but what makes it even worse is that, so what's happening in your brain, right? What's happening in your brain in both of those situations is that it's happening at a very base level. Like if this is your brain, right, this is the cortex, which we have more of than other animals. But this stuff, like, we share with crocodiles, right? The brainstem. So this is the oldest part of the brain. So a lot of that stuff, the us and themness and all that, is happening way down here before your cortex can think about it. Now, you're not a slave to those impulses. You don't have to. But in order to work around them, you've got to engage this part of your brain. And that requires effort and attention. Right? So in order for you to overcome the us and them and the hierarchy thing, you've got to spend some of your attention to override that, to like think, oh no, he's actually probably a nice guy, right? But that takes effort. You don't have attention. You have less and less attention. So, boy, the trend isn't good for us to improve how we relate to each other at work. Because although we can, it's going to require more effort, and we're too busy. So we're stuck in habits. We're stuck in a way of thinking, and it's nobody's fault. It's just the way it is. So we keep going. Because to get out of those ruts, we have to expend a lot of energy, and it's just energy that most people don't have. Okay, thanks for coming. Right. Okay, there's some hope. Here we go. Bring us back up. What this said, they did some fascinating experiments. First of all, when I was a kid, growing up, it was like, well, Hans Jürgen, your brain's fully formed when you're a kid, and then your brain cells die as you get older, and then you're dead. And it's only, I don't know, past 15, 20 years that they figured out, oh, we were wrong. Sorry, Hans Jürgen, your brain is quite plastic, meaning it can change quite a bit. So if you lose your eyesight, actually your visual cortex is used to hear better, and so on, so on, so on, right? So your brain changes. Hey, who knew? Your brain changes. And importantly, what that says is people had compassion training. And compassion training could be as simple as, hey, before I show you these pictures, that same implicit assumption test, I'm just going to do a little something that's going to prime your brain or help you in some way. They did different parts of their brain were active after the training. So what that says is, hey, with practice, it's a teachable thing. It's a teachable thing to override these kind of natural but not necessarily optimal behaviors. And here's this guy. Now, you don't have to be him, but he's known as the happiest man in the world because they measured his brain is physically different in a significant way than our brains from 30, 40 years of compassion training. So, but we don't have to be him. We just have to like take a step. So the big aha here is that, hey, maybe with effort, and I think some of you in the room are experiencing this. Look, I did my 12 weeks. I've been practicing ever since, and kind of something shifted. Shifted in me, shifted in how I treat people during the day. Okay, how's this going to apply at work? I was looking for, a bridge to a better culture. Like, what would the bridge be? How would we go from where we are, right? Like the usual corporate thing, not good or bad, just the way it is. How would we go to some other place? And here's what I find really fascinating that gives me the most hope. Something called the founder effect, which says that it's from evolutionary biology. So it says that something happens and some subset of genes get stranded somewhere. You can imagine lizards on an island, or in this case, birds carry the seeds of these multicolored flowers, but they only carry certain seeds. And now in this other place, it's an other thing. In terms of evolutionary biology, that's how new species often occur. Right? And you can imagine a turtle made it to this other place and that place and so on, right? So like that's how animals change, and it's called speciation. But the founder effect is what changed it. Like you needed those first seeds in that other place. Okay, so that's how we could change. So if this is us now, here's what I thought was delicious, right? And this gives me hope. So the guy wrote that book, Behave, and he studied primates. He's like, look, and even Jane Goodall, who many of you may have come across, right? It's not all love and harmony in nature. In fact, it's quite brutal. And if you've seen, there's a beautiful documentary about Jane Goodall recently. It's nasty what they'll do to enforce the social hierarchy. I mean, if we think we're nasty, like, they're nasty. But here's what he found. And he wrote it up in this beautiful paper. And what it basically says is, look, there is a troop of baboons, and they were like this, like other baboons. But in this troop, something happened. And the males got wiped out by a disease, most of them. And so with fewer males doing that thing, well, different behaviors emerged. And now you had more women around. It was a kinder, gentler baboon culture. And then the founder effect kicked in. So when other baboons from other places, right, that were used to dog-eat-dog or baboon-eat-baboon, when they joined this group, they adopted these behaviors because the cooperative behaviors were more effective. So now it's not just about genes, what color flower, what how long your beak is. It's about behaviors. You are the founders of the new behavior. So when you think of, like, what am I doing and where is this going? Maybe you're 100 people at BMW or Bosch or Siemens or Daimler. Maybe you're 1,000 people, small compared to the population. But there's hope and evidence from evolutionary biology that that behavior can spread because it's actually a better strategy. I heard Janine did a fantastic workshop in the morning on onboarding. Now, as founders, you spread that behavior in other places. So as the example for onboarding, look, here's a person joins the firm. What normally happens is you quickly get assimilated, acculturated to the way things are in the organization. That's how it normally works. But what Janine's experimenting with is, no, I'm going to have those people experience a new way and become their own little founder groups of five. And then when they go back out into the world, particularly when they're visible and connected, then it starts all over again and it spreads. So that's what gives me hope that, look, this grassroots thing, really, like, what's it going, like, what difference could we make? You can make a huge difference because you're establishing those founder communities and some of them will spread because it's a more effective strategy. And we see each other. So what's beautiful about this and what Katarina and Lucas and Barbara and Sabina have set up, what the whole group has set up, is you've shown everybody, in genetics it's called the green beard effect, like we could identify who else is in the founder community. That's who's here right now. This is the board member from Bosch, and we're going to talk about this a little bit in the afternoon, who also gives me hope that you go from grassroots to established to institutional. Because in my work at Deutsche Bank, and Barbara can attest to this, like all of our original experiments and attempts were almost like irritants, probably a better word, and the corporate antibodies kind of attacked us. Not to be dramatic, but it was, we're trying to be different, and that didn't work. However, what Katarina's done is she's established a founder community, and then she's connected it to the institution. So he says, hey, this thing, people tell me it's good. So she's made it safe for him because she tried this, you know, simple experiment that now she has positive feedback on. And people seem to like it. Done. So now he gets up on stage and he's like, go ahead. And he makes it safe to spread that behavior even further and to accelerate it. We talk a lot about companies. Now I'm going to talk about where we're heading. We talk a lot about companies. Like, why? Why don't we talk about companies? Why don't we talk about big corporations? Why don't we just talk about some other groups? The reason is, this is where we start. Just at the 8 companies who won that award, you got about 2 million employees. So you have access to 2 million people that you can help. And that give you 8 laboratories, and you know this, Harold, better than anybody, laboratories to work on and experiment and refine. And because they're corporations, they can fund it and make the movement sustainable. So it's not all about corporations. It's just about corporations first so that we get access to people, we get access to feedback and learning, we get access to funding to make the movement sustainable, and then we keep going. So I was just talking last night to Heidi Deppner. Is Heidi here? Hi, Heidi. About another practice we're going to develop for next year that allows people, how many people here have been in more than one circle? Right. So some of you may be wondering, like you, Magnus, like, now what do I do? Like, what's next? So we're going to work on what's next because we're going to, again, take this early results, improving how people relate to each other in the workplace, And then we're going to keep going so that you could take that even further, how you relate to yourself and how you can accomplish even more as a network. So some of the stuff you do in week 11, we're going to take that even further. And then you go outside of companies to, there was, Katarina introduced me to somebody who's doing work with refugees who want to become, you know, it's a new place. So think about onboarding times a million, right? New country, new company, new place. How do I get connected? Think about anybody who's looking for a job. Or think about people who've been out of the workforce for whatever reason. Anyone who's disadvantaged, really. Can you help them earn access themselves? Can you help them use this practice and the other practices to come so that they don't just feel better at a Daimler or a Siemens, but they feel better kind of wherever they are, whatever their stage in life? Because once again, it comes down to the big three. You have a little bit more control, a little bit sense of competence, getting better at something, and a sense of connection. When you lose that, I was talking with someone doing a project in Spartanburg, where one of the companies has a factory. There's a high rate of people in jobs in Spartanburg, South Carolina, who just are not happy. So what happens? Well, back to the social hierarchy, back to baboons. When baboon number two loses a fight, what does he do? He beats baboon number three. So people lose their job or otherwise have diminished status at work, domestic abuse goes up. They beat their wife. And so this isn't, it's not a game. It's not a funny three-letter phrase. It's like, we're going to help the planet be a little kinder and gentler, starting in the workplace. We're going to change how people relate to themselves, to each other, and to the work that they do. And that's going to unlock a lot of benefits, including business benefits, but absolutely personal benefits. This is the last thing. After 700 pages, the guy wrote that book says, by the way, it's complicated. Like, thanks. I could have written that, you know, at the beginning. Because there's no one thing. That was his point. It's not like, oh, this gene or this neuropeptide, you know, oxytocin is the key. We're just way too complicated for that. So there's a lot going on. And anyone who has kids, if you try and, you know, carrot and stick, no iPad time unless you do the something, right? It's like way more complicated than that. But what's the alternative? So we're going to try. And what you're doing is you have the courage, just by your physical presence here, you have the courage to make the attempt. The attempt to make a difference for yourself. Please start with yourself. The courage to make a difference for yourself, for your colleagues, for the people around you. And if we do that, and do that in these numbers, we're going to take that founder effect, and we're going to expand and expand and expand. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, John. So we have a bit of time for a Q&A, and I'm sorry, I switched to German. Wir haben ein bisschen Zeit für Frage- und Antwortspiel oder für Frage und Antworten. Wir werden auch die Q&A filmen. Das heißt, wenn einer von euch nicht auf diesem Ding erscheinen möchte, sagt er dann einfach Bescheid und dann wird es rausgeschnitten. Ich moderiere das so ein bisschen. Wer Fragen hat, einfach melden. Ihr könnt sie in Englisch stellen, ihr könnt sie in Deutsch stellen. Ich übersetze sie dann. Das ist vollkommen euch überlassen. Fragen an John. Oh, okay, danke.
I love the person who asked the first question.
Thank you, John. I have one question with regards to the aspect of control, because on the other hand, there's also this thinking that there's an illusion of control, because as you mentioned, the seeds, you have a seed for a cherry, it will always grow a cherry, or you have a seed for a flower, it will always grow a flower. So no matter what you do, some things will happen. How do you match that with the control aspect? How would you try to match it?
Without getting carried away with the metaphor, that's not how it works. So the seed for a cherry is a cherry. What it turns out to be is that there's something called epigenetics. There is much, much greater interaction than we ever thought between environment and our programming. And so change the environment, change what happens in ways that are, at least currently, impossible to predict. So no, I may not turn into an apple tree, but you take people and put them into another environment, just like you take the angry baboon and put them in that peaceful society and he changes his behavior. Even though he's got the same wiring, the same genetics, the same something as the other baboons, the interaction between environment and nature produces a wildly different effect. Does that make sense? Thank you.
Any further questions?
Or challenges, like if there's something that you just don't, you're like, look, I call Shaisa on that. Like, right? Like, go ahead. And I, you know, that there's no one way, and the feedback from the community is what keeps making our methods better and better. Look, there's a founder effect right there.
Yes. I have a question. Do you have practical tips how to protect yourself from bad energy that might be around you?
And practice doing that. Right. So bad energy around you comes in all sorts of forms, and it could be the mundane, like, oh, I sent you that nice note and you never replied. Right? That could be kind of something. It could be a boss who's like, hey, who's mean, right? Like Milgram's kind of, the system is mean. The two things that help me, one, I focus on framing it as a contribution. And so that's very liberating because, look, I can't control your reaction. I just can't. All I control is what I do and my reactions. And even that's hard. Try and make my contributions, and if you respond or you don't like it, or you don't like me, all I could do is what I could do. And I do that in an authentic way, and then that frees me. It may still sting, like it may not feel good, but I, you know, with practice, it's easier to deal with so I don't get caught up in it. And I used to absolutely get caught up in it. Get the nasty email on a Friday, the weekend's ruined. And that, I've gotten a little bit better at that. That's one. Two, importantly, I found that there's a power in the network. So every day, even when I worked in a company, even at the low points of my career, boy, I would spend, I'd interact with you, and I'm being totally serious, and that would be a little oasis in my day. And then if it was you and Thomas Olson who's here, and then it was Katarina who's in another company, and so on. And boy, we talk a lot about energy earlier. I got strength from that, sometimes joy from that, and it made me more resilient. Like, gee, that person doesn't like what I do, but okay, not everybody likes anything. And here are people who are, and that was very helpful. So those two things. Thank you.
Weitere Fragen?
Okay.
And now the behavior spreads. This is beautiful.
Obviously, we are all enthusiasts here about working out loud, but one thing that comes to my mind, especially if we're talking about scaling, is we have the danger of being something like what we call in German Schwarmdumm.
That doesn't sound good.
Swarm. Well, the swarm is stupid. We are all from the same swarm. So have you ever met anybody telling you, you know, working out loud, it's just stupid, it does not work?
Sure.
And what are the reasons? Because that what we might face when we will scale the topic and we have suddenly a lot of people doing that, and then these people might come up.
Yeah, more. Oh, sure, right. Oh, thank you for that. So, hey, guess what happens? The bigger that this becomes, and this isn't me, and this isn't like Wall, but the bigger this movement becomes, right? So more people, more companies, the more likely you will attract someone that does not believe in what you're doing. So that's going to happen. And we've already had it. Sabine and I were talking about this the other day. It's a religion. Look at these people out loud. Let them have their fun. Oh, they're babies. They're naive. That's never going to change anything. You need to blow up the system. Maybe. Right? Maybe. I don't know. So back to what Janine said. Look, all I could do is do what I do, make my little contributions, and social proof's a big thing. So look, I don't engage in debates on Twitter about should it be working out loud or XYZ. Is it religion, not religion? I listen to the feedback, but I don't necessarily go down that road, right? Like, oh, they don't like it, I'm gonna prove to them. Instead, just keep going. Keep going, keep making your contributions, and then what look at this. So the people my boss at Deutsche Bank did not embrace me, right? So is he a jerk? Did I show him? No. Like he was one guy. So you keep going. You find the tribe, and then when you hear people say, and you may say it yourself, maybe other people at your company, this helped me. You're like, oh, look, maybe you're right about blowing up the system, but I helped that person. I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to help that person and that person. And if that's all you do, great. But there's more and more evidence that particularly, and that's why I think what your companies are doing is so brilliant, the more that you collect that evidence and make it visible, then the more you stand up a little straighter. And you don't have to fight. You're not fighting. You're giving. Keep giving. That's your best strategy. Thank you. The famous Harold Shermer.
Well, now I'm shy.
Now I'm preparing, yes.
No. We're always looking for the obvious, for the argument to sell Working Out Loud to the management. Back in the session we had upstairs about KPIs, the question came up, and that's a question for you and maybe for everyone else, because we've had a total of probably 1,000 circles so far worldwide. I don't know.
Around in that ballpark, right? 1,000, something like that.
Does anyone know anyone who came out of a circle saying that was a waste of time?
No, but they wouldn't be the ones to tell me. So I'm aware. Being married is great for this because and having children is the same way. Like if you think too much of yourself, like you know, they're there for you to help you not think too much of yourself. So my point being, I'm under no pretense that we've discovered some perfect thing, that it works all the time, that it's for everybody. The honest answer is, we don't know. So is it only good for 1% at Bosch, which would be 4,000 people? Or is it good for 10%, which would be 40,000? Or is it good for everybody? So back to this theme of, let's find out. So you've had this experience at Evonik, right? We were just talking about this last night. It's like, hey, some of the groups, you know, they like it, they believe, but like logistics got in the way and so on. What does that mean? It means we've got work to do. It means that a lot of what's happening in companies here is what I'll call implementation innovations. So the people at ZF, Julia's there, they're doing things that are remarkable. Janine with onboarding, that was remarkable. Board member sponsorship, that's remarkable. And now, all of these different innovations, and there are going to be more from other companies, you know, Swisscom may come up with the next one. We're still finding our way, and that's again the beauty of this being a movement as opposed to something else. Feeding that back into the ecosystem will improve the practice, will lead to other adaptations, and we'll keep going. But in the meantime, we'll help some people, help some more, and keep growing.
Okay, here was another question from Fee.
Yeah, I actually have two questions. A great leader.
I'm sorry, one per customer.
First one, I'm going to stay with a baboon analogy. What we've learned there is actually that impact was the greatest where all baboons died. Is that an approach for us as well to go where?
yes, I was thinking about that with the metaphor, but so here's to give you a serious answer, is that look, I think corporations are much more resilient than we ever imagined, than I ever imagined. So back in 2008, you know, it's post-Facebook, there are enterprise social networks. I'm like, hey, this is going to change everything, and it didn't. So they're very resilient. So waiting for all the baboons to die or to blow up the hierarchy, personally, I think that is, that's, you're going to wait for a long time. Having said that, I think what we've seen with other kinds of behaviors is back to this founder effect. Like, look, now you've identified your tribe within DHL or Siemens or so on, and you can spread it in a way that's safe, and then we're still figuring out other ways to make it safe or embed it so you can spread it further. So no, you don't have to kill people. It can spread without that. Yeah.
Second one, what we also know from behavioral psychology is that behavior is also contagious, right? So positive behavior is most contagious with peers, and negative behavior has most impact in terms of contagiousness from superiors. So where do you see yourselves moving with the whole idea of working out loud in the future, since what we know from experiments so far is when you want to have most impact in your organization, you should also look at the organizational structure. So can you see that as an essential part in the future of working out loud?
That seems like that's a beautiful question. Thank you. Yes. So the way I look at it is, how do you make this practice accessible for more and more people? What we've learned right now, I'll make this answer short, I could feel the vibe, is so if I'm an executive, right, whatever that means to you, if I'm an executive, am I going to join a circle like for an hour a week? Probably not. Maybe some will. Some people at Bosch did. But if I want to really reach more of them, I feel like it's up to us, to adapt the practice and reach them some other way. If I'm in a manufacturing plant at ZF, or am I some guy going to like stop the assembly line? I'm going to go to my circle meet. No. So it's up to us to adapt the practice so that he can experience or she can experience the benefits in their own safe, confidential space in a way that works. So those adaptations, those experiments, we're going to keep doing them. And we've got some lined up, you know, starting tomorrow, and we're going to keep going and keep going, feed them back into the community, so then they spread more quickly. And so, and again, back to you and what you're doing with the Group of Eight companies, that's how they accelerate it. It's like, hey, she did this, you did Wall for Leaders, she did something else for shared goals, and you contributed back, and then everybody wins. And that's what I see happening more and more. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, John. Thank you for your questions.
Wir möchten euch jetzt Gelegenheit geben, da gemeinsam noch mal ein bisschen tiefer reinzutauchen und zu gucken, wie wir unterschiedliche Themen anpacken, vielleicht auch für euch als Inspiration und Idee, die ihr mitnehmen könnt. Damit wollen wir uns die nächste halbe Stunde beschäftigen. Dann bitte nicht sofort zur Zigarettenpause rennen, denn dann möchten wir im Anschluss daran gleich nochmal ein Gruppenbild mit euch allen machen. Und dann gibt's Kaffee. Aber wir wollen ganz gerne loslegen. Und wir haben uns überlegt, ganz vorne anzufangen. Basti, mit dir. Da oben steht der Circle Stuffing Prozess und der ist gelb, weil der kommt von Continental. So. Und ich würde ganz gerne dich bitten, vielleicht hier auch mal mit dieser Community zu teilen. Wie macht ihr das? Wie packt ihr das an? Und wie kamt ihr vielleicht auch auf die Idee? Und wie funktioniert es bei euch?
Ja, sehr gerne. Sind wir gelb übrigens, Harald? Gelb ist es nicht gar. Ich habe heute meine Corporate Socks in der Wäsche, sonst bin ich gerne mit so gelb-orangenen Socken unterwegs, hatte ich gerade schon zu Lukas gesagt. Gab übrigens gerade noch einen ganz spannenden Tweet von dem Stefan Reiser, wer den kennt, der geschrieben hat, Mensch, beeindruckend, ihr lernt ja voneinander irgendwie mehr als manche in dem eigenen Unternehmen voneinander. Von daher auch eine ganz, ganz schöne Auszeichnung nochmal dessen, was da inzwischen alles entstanden ist. Und in der Tat, dieser Circle-Staffing-Prozess hat wahrscheinlich Harald den größten Anteil daran. Ich kann ja mal ganz kurz beschreiben, wie das bei uns läuft. Wir haben ja dieses Enterprise Social Network, Connext heißt das bei uns. Und wir haben dort eine Wiki-Seite eingerichtet. Kennen wahrscheinlich die meisten von euch das Format, wo wir eine Participant-List aufmachen. Das heißt, jeder hat die Möglichkeit, sich dort, wenn er an WOL interessiert ist, einzutragen in diese Participant-List und anzugeben, aus welcher Abteilung er kommt, wann er gerne starten möchte mit WOL. Und dann Interessierte zu finden. Und was häufig passiert, Harald hat das auch schon mal beschrieben, ist, dass dann Leute sagen, naja, wann ruft mich denn jetzt jemand an? Oder wann schreibt mir jemand eine Mail? Das heißt, es ist so der erste Schritt hin zu Kulturveränderung, den dann auch mit auf den Weg zu geben. Naja, dann werd doch selber mal tätig und guck mal, wer dich interessieren könnte. Das ist ja schon der erste Schritt im Sinne von implizit mal nachdenken. Wer könnte mir denn helfen bei meinem Ziel, was ich vielleicht schon irgendwie im Hinterkopf habe, vielleicht aber noch gar nicht formuliert habe? Wer könnte mir denn helfen, diesem Ziel näher zu kommen? Das sind die ersten Gedanken. Und von daher ermutigen wir die Leute da sehr stark, einfach auch selbst organisiert mal tätig zu werden. Und sich mal zu überlegen, mit wem hätte ich denn auch Spaß dran? Bewusst, wenn ich jetzt aus HR komme, vielleicht auch mal nicht mit HRlern in einem Circle zu sein, sondern mal Feedback aus dem Business zu holen. Und die sagen dann, Mensch, das Ziel, was du dir überlegt hast, ist irgendwie unverständlich oder was ihr da in HR macht. Also so ein Blödsinn gibt es zum Glück nicht so in der Form. In der Community, die hat bei uns jetzt so 1400 Mitglieder insgesamt, die WOL-Community. Die ganzen Materialien hinterlegt, die Circle Guides und alles, was man braucht, um da loszulegen. Und typischerweise ist es dann auch so, dass es einen Moderator pro Circle gibt, der sich dann da auch schwerpunktmäßig drum kümmert, die Gruppe durch die 12 Wochen zu führen.
Sehr schön. Vielen, vielen Dank. Und wenn ich auf unsere Grafik gucke, dann sehe ich, dass von Continental aus 2 Pfeile führen, einer zu Siemens, da kommen wir gleich drauf, aber einer führt auch direkt zu Bosch, zur Carter. Und von Bosch aus führen eine ganze Reihe von Pfeilen weg zu Dingen, die wir von euch gelernt haben, aber auch Dinge, die ihr von Unternehmen gelernt habt. Und ein ganz, ganz starkes Thema bei euch ist der One-Pager. Den haben wir eigentlich alle geklaut. Deswegen erzähl doch mal was über den berühmten Bosch One-Pager. In vielen Fällen einfach nur das Logo ausgekritzelt haben und dann Siemens drüber geschrieben haben oder so. Also der One-Pager, Kater.
Wir haben sogar eine White-Label-Version draußen. Die kann man tatsächlich einfach, da muss man sich noch nicht mal die Mühe machen, das Bosch wegzumachen, sondern kann man gleich sein Unternehmenslogo draufpinseln. Wir standen vor der Herausforderung, dass wir angefangen haben, intern zu kommunizieren. Und es ist bis heute, glaube ich, der Running Gag, wer erklären kann, was Working Out Loud ist und macht in einem Satz, der darf nach New York zu John fliegen. Bis heute ungelöst, das Problem. Wir haben es mal auf eine Seite immerhin eingedampft bekommen. Und ich glaube, was das Besondere daran war, dass wir die Ersten waren, die rausgelegt haben, wo ist denn der Mehrwert? Der Mehrwert für mich als Mensch, als Teilnehmer und der Mehrwert fürs Unternehmen. Also was bedeutet das tatsächlich, wenn wir das tun? Und wir haben auf diesem One-Pager, das ist wie eine Infografik aufgebaut, haben wir im Endeffekt gezeigt, wie läuft das Programm? Als Grafik, ne, in kleinen Schritten ans Ziel mit 4 bis 5 Leuten, einmal die Woche plus Hausaufgaben. Das haben wir grafisch dargestellt, plus diese Value Proposition, plus ein bisschen Feedback, das wir so gesammelt haben aus den Circles, haben wir mit so Bubbles abgebildet und eine kurze Erklärung, was Working Out Loud eigentlich bedeutet und die Working Out Loud Circle Methode.
Das führt uns eigentlich gleich zu der Frage, jetzt haben wir hier so roundabout 100 Leute, ein paar von denen kennen den One-Pager und ein paar von denen, die juckt es jetzt wahrscheinlich schon in den Fingerspitzen, die sagen, wie kriege ich den?
Der steht auf LinkedIn. Katharina Krenz, da ist er, in der ersten Reihe. Einmal hochhalten, bitte.
Wunderbar, genau.
Genau, das heißt, wir haben ihn relativ schnell veröffentlicht. Im Endeffekt ist so, jeder, der bei uns anfragt, Mensch, was macht ihr, wie macht ihr es, können wir das auch verwenden, kriegt von uns das grüne Signal, go for it. Wir teilen gerne. Wenn ihr das verändert, bitte gerne wieder zurück an uns, weil auch wir würden das gerne weiterentwickeln. Und das ist quasi mal ein erster Draft gewesen. Im Endeffekt, wir sind uns, glaube ich, die meisten sind sich einig, alles, was draußen ist, ist immer Draft, weil es immer Leute gibt, die drauf aufbauen, die das weiterentwickeln, die das vielleicht weiter präzisieren, die mit ihrer Erfahrung das anreichern. Deshalb freuen wir uns immer, wenn wir diese One-Pager von anderen dann irgendwann wieder in die Finger kriegen. Ich glaube, der neueste kommt gerade von Siemens. Wir nehmen den gern zurück und machen unseren dann noch wieder besser und pinseln aber Bosch auch wieder drauf.
Das war jetzt eine wundervolle Brücke. Vielen Dank. Ich habe noch mal kurz die Claudia, meine Kollegin von Siemens, auf die Bühne geholt. Wir machen es mal ganz kurz umgekehrt. Claudia, du hast von Bosch das Co-Creation-Team übernommen. Nicht das Co-Creation-Team, aber die Idee. Mhm. Wir haben irgendwie zum letzten November hin mit relativ heißer Nadel und wahnsinnig viel Energie einen Kickoff hingezimmert und das kann man halt nicht alleine und dir ist dann irgendwie diese brillante Idee eingefallen, auch in Anlehnung an das Co-Creation-Team von Bosch, ein Nucleus-Team zu installieren. Erzähl doch mal, wie arbeitet das, was macht das, wie läuft das? Und der Hadi ist übrigens auch da vom Nucleus-Team, genau. Wo ist er? Genau, hallo, genau. Applaus für Hadi, genau.
Jetzt zuerst einmal ist es eine ganz wunderbare Erfahrung, so etwas als Graswurzelinitiative nicht alleine zu treiben, sondern mit Kollegen, mit denen man sich austauschen kann, wo jeder unterschiedliche Talente und Fähigkeiten hat und dann genau halt in der Organisation des Kickoffs eben diese Aufgaben auch übernommen hat. Wir arbeiten wirklich komplett klassisch selbst organisiert. Wir haben angefangen, haben uns erstmal überlegt, was haben wir denn für große Aufgabenblöcke? Dann haben wir uns ein Kanban-Board gestrickt in Trello. Ich finde es immer sehr einfach, Trello zu nutzen. Es gab gab für jedes Aufgabenpaket einen Owner, der hat einfach dafür gesorgt, dass das dann auch getan wurde. Und jeder, der mitmachen wollte an diesem Thema, hat sich schlicht und ergreifend auf die Karte eingetragen und dann wurde gemacht. Und wie halt Selbstorganisation auch funktionieren sollte, so haben wir es dann auch gemacht. Die Entscheidungen, die in diesem Arbeitspaket unter den Beteiligten getroffen worden sind, die sind auch nicht mal diskutiert worden. Die sind gesetzt gewesen. Wir haben uns dann, wir haben vielleicht 4 Wochen für die gesamte Vorbereitung gebraucht. Wir haben uns 2-mal zu Stand-ups von jeweils einer halben Stunde, einer Stunde getroffen. Und da ging es nur immer darum zu sagen, wie weit ist das jeweilige Arbeitspaket? Braucht jemand noch Hilfe und Unterstützung? Und das war's. Ja, wir haben natürlich ziemlich reingekeult, aber es war auf der anderen Seite eine sehr stressfreie Erfahrung. Es war eine sehr schöne Erfahrung. Wir bei Siemens, wie in vielen großen Unternehmen, diskutieren noch immer gerne Entscheidungen von anderen. Und einfach mal zu sehen, dass man sich auf den anderen verlassen kann und dass es funzt. Mhm. Also ich glaube, Hadi, da stimmst du mir zu, ne? Das war großartig.
Wunderbar.
Und so geht es auch jetzt weiter. Dieses Voll-Nucleus-Team besteht auch weiterhin und wir treiben halt bei Siemens und bei Siemens Healthineers Working Out Loud als Graswurzel-Movement aus diesem Nucleus-Team weiter, machen uns aber auch eben halt Gedanken, wie wir es in die Institution unserer Firma mit hineinbringen können. Und es ist auch erstaunlich, wie viele Ideen alleine jetzt aus dem Kickoff gekommen sind von Leuten, die bestimmte Funktionsbereiche, Training zum Beispiel oder HR bei uns verantworten, die auf einmal sagen, hey, da ist ein Ansatz, das könnte ich machen. Das ist echt cool.
Und ich glaube, so ein Kickoff, das ist vielleicht dann auch nochmal ein Gedanke zu mitnehmen. Das ist gar nicht unbedingt eine Frage von großen wirtschaftlichen Mitteln, aber das ist, glaube ich, schon nochmal eine notwendige Maßnahme. Also man kann ganz viel in der Graswurzel machen und ich glaube, das ist die Erfahrung, die ihr hier sicher auch sozusagen in der Fläche habt. Aber wenn man dann eigentlich, glaube ich, ein Momentum reinbringen möchte, dann braucht man diese große Party und das Feiern können wir alle quasi per Geburt, aber wie man einen richtigen Kickoff macht, das haben wir beim Daimler gelernt, gell? Deswegen, Lukas, erzähl doch mal, wie ging das denn los bei euch?
Mit Working Out Loud in Summer oder wie wir es dann auch über Veranstaltungen verbreitet haben?
Also ich erinnere mich an ein denkwürdiges, sehr großes Fest im September letzten Jahres, wo Working Out Loud Bestandteil des großen Movement-Starts war und damit, glaube ich, einfach eine wahnsinnig große, weil auch integrale Kraft gekriegt habt. Und ihr habt beides gemacht. Ihr habt im Prinzip das Netzwerk losgetreten, aber damit auch schon automatisch wohl losgetreten. Und ich glaube, dass das ein sehr, sehr kluger Zug war. Erzähl doch mal.
Absolut. Bei Daimler haben wir mit dem ersten Circle 2016 im März angefangen und dann hat sich das langsam verbreitet, aber wir haben natürlich sehr, sehr schnell gemerkt, bei 292.000 Mitarbeitern, um das wirklich zu verbreiten, brauchst du einen Multiplikatorenansatz. Und das haben wir natürlich für viele Themen. Und für Working Out Loud alleine wäre es wahrscheinlich nicht gelungen, aber in der Kombination für digitale Zusammenarbeit und für Community Management, also Dinge, die immer um vernetzte Zusammenarbeit gingen, kann man das sehr, sehr gut integrieren. Und dann haben wir, es war glaube ich sogar im November 2016, haben wir ein erstes Kickoff-Event gemacht für unser Network. Wir nennen uns tatsächlich Networker mit einem großen W, um den Arbeitsbezug dann auch klarzustellen. Da haben wir angefangen, wirklich in einem kleineren Kreis, mal mit 80 Personen und haben das dann auch in einem interaktiven Charakter gemacht. Das heißt, es war ein ganzer Tag und immer abwechselnd Keynote-Speeches und Workshop-Sessions. Und das Schöne war, dass wir damals auch schon dann andere Unternehmen mit reingenommen haben. Das heißt, Harald war da, du warst da, Katar war da. Jetzt überlege ich gerade, wer war noch alles da. Alexander war da. Lee Bryant war da, der John Stepper himself war da. Und diese Offenheit dann natürlich auch für Mitarbeiter sichtbar zu machen, das Netzwerk eben nicht nur auf Bottlenecks zu lassen, also in dem Fall auf meiner Person, sondern dann zu verbreiten, auf breitere Beine zu stellen, das war ganz wichtig. Und feiern konnten wir da auch. Und dieses Jahr haben wir es, glaube ich, nochmal ein bisschen auf die Spitze getrieben. Da haben wir dann aus einem Eintages-Event 2 Tage gemacht, aus 80 Mitarbeitern und Multiplikatoren 400 Networker. Das Schöne an einem Zweitages-Event ist, dass man einen Abend und eine Nacht dazwischen hat. Und insbesondere die internationalen Multiplikatoren, die haben tatsächlich bis weit nach Mitternacht auf der zentralen Mainstage getanzt, was dazu geführt hat, dass dann auch unser Board of Management-Mitglied, die Frau Jungo Brünger, am nächsten Tag auf einer wirklich sehr schwarzen Bühne dann ankam, die mal ursprünglich weiß war. Aber Es ist ja auch wichtig, dass solche Events Spuren hinterlassen, und das war da tatsächlich der Fall.
Sprichwörtlich. Du hast gerade indirekt ein Thema angesprochen, nämlich, ich nenne es mal, der Prophet im eigenen Land. Ich glaube, das kennen wir alle in großen Unternehmen. Wir haben es uns zur Regel gemacht, wenn es irgendwie möglich ist, ein Tabu zu brechen, nämlich in diese großen Unternehmen, wo es eigentlich total unüblich ist, dass man überhaupt jemanden von draußen reinholt. Deswegen glauben die da draußen ja, man muss die alle irgendwie sterben lassen, die Konzerne, weil die machen nichts, weil wir lassen so wenig raus. Das heißt, man sieht wenig von uns, und das ist natürlich ein Tabubruch, dann irgendwie beim Daimler dann so einen Siemensianer anzuschleppen oder beim Bosch und umgekehrt. Und wir setzen mittlerweile sehr auf diesen Propheten aus dem eigenen Land, weil die tatsächlich auch, ich habe das neulich mal bei Bosch, da war ich nämlich vor 2 Tagen zu Gast, und da habe ich nämlich erzählt, das ist halt so, wie wenn der Sohn nach Hause kommt und sagt, alle in der Klasse haben ein iPhone, nur wir nicht. Das hat plötzlich eine ganz irrsinnige Wirkung, und dann hören komischerweise Vorstände, Führungskräfte aller Farben einfach auch hin, weil euch ja auch ganz stark die Frage beschäftigt, wenn die Graswurzel dann irgendwann mal so die ersten Blüten treibt, wie kriegen wir es dann trotzdem in die Fläche rein? Weil es kommt der Zeitpunkt, es ist halt so, wo du einen Fürsprecher brauchst, wo du einen Euro brauchst, wo du irgendwie ein Momentum brauchst, und das geht eigentlich nur mit einer größeren Party, und die größere Party, die muss man sich im Regelfall genehmigen lassen. Ich schaue nochmal so ein bisschen auf unser, das sind wirklich Exemplare, wir haben noch eine ganze Latte mehr, aber da ist noch eins drauf, was genau in diesem Sinne, wie überzeuge ich eigentlich Entscheidungsträger, glaube ich, auch eine ganz, ganz wichtige Rolle spielt, und wo auch Bosch natürlich mit dem zeitlichen Vorlauf, den ihr habt, und mit der irrsinnigen Kreativität, die in dir drin steckt, Kater, wir haben das mal so genannt, so ein bisschen despektierlich, die Kater kann halt echt Ideen scheißen. Ich weiß das aus eigener Erfahrung, das ist wirklich faszinierend, mit der zusammenzusitzen, und das geht so, da kommst du mit dem Denken gar nicht hinterher, und dann bringt sie es auch noch auf die Straße, und insofern kein Wunder, dass da so viele rote Pfeile von Bosch weggehen, und auch kein Wunder, dass der CHRO, der Chief of HR, bei Bosch hinter diese Sache pusht. Ja. Ein wichtiges Element, vielleicht zum Abschluss, KPI-Feedback. Darüber wollen sie nämlich immer alle reden. Die sagen dann, schlepp mir Zahlen ran, und die Kata schleppt dann auch Zahlen ran. Erzähl uns mal, wie ihr das macht, Erfolgsmessung.
Ja, ich glaube, das war vor 2 Jahren schon das Erste, was wir auf die Straße gebracht haben, nämlich wir haben für Leute, die durch diesen Circle durchgelaufen sind nach Woche 12, einen Online-Feedback-Bogen rausgegeben mit, ich glaube, 25 Fragen. Das kann man so eigentlich nicht machen, aber dadurch, dass Voll kostenlos ist und wir da jede Menge Zeit und Energie reinstecken und der Wunsch derer, die es bis Woche 12 durchgehalten haben, etwas zurückzugeben, sehr groß ist, haben wir 25 Fragen gestellt. Und Deutsch und Englisch online und die ausgewertet. Und da purzeln tatsächlich ganz tolle KPIs raus, nämlich dass 100% das weiterempfehlen. Oder dass, ich glaube, über 85% sagen, das bringt mir mehr als ein traditionelles Classroom-Training. Dass, ich glaube, 93% sagen, ich nutze Bosch Connect effizienter. Das heißt, die digitalen Tools, Digital Collaboration, funktioniert effizienter. Dass man sich strukturierter vernetzt. Auch das ist etwas, das wir vorantreiben, das bei uns in unseren Zielen genauso verankert ist. Das in unseren Leadership Principles genauso drinsteht. Wir wollen raus aus dem Silo, wir wollen cross-functional arbeiten, wir wollen über alle Hierarchiegrenzen hinweg arbeiten, wir wollen regelmäßig auch über alle Hierarchiegrenzen kommunizieren. So, und wir können nachweisen, dass Working Out Loud hier einen großen Beitrag leisten kann, wenn wir es denn einfach tun.
Und letzten Endes wollen wir alle den Schritt raus machen. Volt startet eigentlich beim Individuum und berührt auch das Individuum. Aber dann müssen wir den Schritt rausmachen und eine sehr seriöse unternehmerische Diskussion führen, weil sonst finden wir keine Fürsprecher im Unternehmen. Und da seid ihr einfach auch ein Role Model. Diesen Switch habt ihr wahnsinnig gut hingekriegt, auch rauszugehen aus der persönlichen Erfahrung, wo wir dann auch sagen, es sind auch wirklich schöne Beziehungen und schöne Erfahrungen am Arbeitsplatz, die man vielleicht schon lange nicht mehr erlebt hat. Aber dann auch rüber die Brücke zu schlagen und zu sagen, und das hat auch Wirkung auf die Performance in der Organisation. Und erst dann kriegen wir natürlich auch das Blut in den Puls rein.
Ich würde gerne, weil ich weiß, hier gab es eine KPI-Session und die KPI-Fragen kommen immer und immer wieder, mal ganz unüblich bitten, das Boy Co-Creation Team des Bosch mal die Hand zu heben und den Felix Hieronymi, mein Ex-Chef, mal die Hand zu heben. Die sind nämlich maßgeblich dafür verantwortlich, dass es das bei Bosch gibt, dass das so groß geworden ist, dass das in die Breite gegangen ist und dass wir diese KPIs erheben. Und bevor jetzt alle mich gleich nach KPIs bestürmen, da sind noch 6 Leute im Publikum.
Okay, wir klatschen. Wunderbar. Und jetzt schaue ich nochmal so in die Runde. Wahrscheinlich gibt es 1001 Frage oder keine.
Ich glaube, der Harald hat eine Frage.
Ich kann einfach die Klappe nicht halten, sorry. Ich fand es jetzt mit den KPIs am Schluss deswegen natürlich so spannend, weil wir das oben vorher diskutiert haben. Und wir haben uns ja da oben auch die Frage gestellt, warum brauchen wir, damit wir Management-Commitment kriegen. Wir haben dann festgestellt, dass es ja bestimmte Verdächtige gibt, die eigentlich damit sehr erfolgreich sind, mit Zahlen Management zu überzeugen. Also die ganz, ganz großen Consultants. Was machen die und was war das Besondere früher? Die waren die einzigen, die von einer Firma zur anderen gehen konnten und die einsammeln. Jetzt haben wir aber alle hier. Die Frage wäre, wäre es denn nicht sinnvoll, die KPIs, die ihr aufgenommen habt, mal über alle Firmen hinweg aufzunehmen und die dann wir als ein Netzwerk an unsere Firmen zu präsentieren? Dann müssen wir nicht McKinsey heißen, wir können das selber, oder?
Okay, dann würde ich an der Stelle jetzt den Sack zumachen. Wir haben gleich nochmal Sessions, da können wir nochmal ganz, ganz viel austauschen. Gibt auch noch eine Kaffeepause. Jetzt aber wollen wir euch alle für die Ewigkeit alle einmal miteinander auf dem Bild haben. Erstmal herzlichen Dank an euch. Applaus